Chris Moore.
Sports Radio 101.9 FM and Sports Radio 66 WFAN.
As I said to the Kansas City quarterback in the airport,
what's up, Mahomes?
I had to do it at least once tonight. Hoffman didn't even blink. That's what happened. You become immune when you've produced for me enough. There are no surprises. Like, there's nothing like, whoa, you wouldn't believe what. No, I would. I would believe it. Because he's a dope. He does whatever he wants, and that's why he only works weekends. It's a strategy. It's a game plan. They're with me win or tie. Welcome to Hour 3 of the Radio Get-Together. Chris Moore here till 10 o'clock at Salad Cottage on this rainy Saturday night in New York City. We will turn our attention at the top of the hour to the game of baseball. And there's a lot of interest still. All the leagues have done a great job, haven't they, of really extending the time in which you're interested about their games by making sure that their awards are late, like MVP and Cy Young and all that, and then the free agent period and the signings, and then the next thing you know, it's pitchers and catchers, and you're right back at it again. And all the leagues are great at it. Basketball has become really good, the NBA, at free agent season in the summertime and keeping their game front and center on people's minds. So congratulations to all of them. There's no harm done there. Do we have Maury? We do. Maury Brown, Forbes writer covering baseball, Major League Baseball, and nice enough to give us a little time on a Saturday night. Maury, Chris Moore here in New York. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great, Chris. How about yourself?
I'm doing well. We appreciate you talking to us a little baseball and a lot of interest in this town because both rosters incomplete and both teams seemingly in the market. I was critical of Jeff Wilpon for saying that if he's going to trade Noah Syndergaard, it would only be for a lopsided deal because I thought that that basically tells the other general managers or whoever's going to make the trade for the other team, hey, you're making a stupid deal here. You're giving us more than you should. That's why we're taking it. Otherwise, we're not taking the deal. So I thought that was kind of weird. But I understand the sentiment. What are your thoughts about what these New York teams might do in this offseason?
Well, I think that the Yankees have done great right out of the gate here, making this deal with the Mariners and bolstering the rotation. I thought that that was really the place that they really needed to address the most coming out of last season. I think that they, if they had probably shored up the pitching a little bit more, they probably could have gone deeper all the way to the World Series. So I thought that that was a very good start. They had to move quite a few pieces for it. They give up Sheffield, which, of course, is their prime prospect. But I thought that that was a good start. In terms of the Mets, you know, it's interesting you bring up Syndergaard. I was looking at his numbers. You know, he certainly bounced back from his injury, and he had two complete games last year, which I think gives some thought to the Mets. So they go, look, you know, could something happen again? Could he have fully bounced back? Is it possible that he could be injured again? And that's always a risk that all teams have to make, right? But, I mean, it's like you said, you know, I think that the Wilpons have feelers out on him. It's just like you said, if you're going to go out and say you want to, you know, have a heavy haul pulled in, well, unless there's somebody really serious out there and has their pedal to the metal and want to make moves and are willing to basically dump a lot of prospects right now, then I think that really limits the field. And let's be honest, right now in baseball, prospects are the gold standard by which you build everything. I mean, this idea that we're, tanking isn't really what the point is. The point is building up your prospects and having something in the pipeline so that you're competitive from not just one season but multiple seasons.
Absolutely, and I do believe a couple things certainly have changed. Obviously, the length of starting pitching outings have changed, and therefore you need more pitchers. And the other thing is that, and I sold this a lot last year on the air doing talk shows, I really believe now in the full 25-man roster, meaning that there's no room on the good teams for dead weight. You're going to have injuries. You're going to have a lot of pitchers used every week. So all 12 of them have to be guys that you're willing to go out and put your hand up and bring in. And you only have three bench players, so they better be pretty good bench players. So I do believe more than I ever have before that a 25-man roster of players you're proud of is what the Houstons and Clevelands and Red Sox Yankees are interested in making sure that they have, you know, really good depth with really good players, not great players, but players they're proud of.
Yeah, and I think that the bullpenning is something that, of course, you know, became something that was in vogue, certainly with the Rays, you know, who made no bones about the fact that they were going to kind of go in that route, and that was largely a Moneyball type thing. Is it going to work all the time? I'm not so sure, but I certainly think the postseason has shown that managers get itchy trigger fingers, right? You start to see a pitcher start to go a little bit sideways, and you're going to, you know, basically yard them out of there real quick. You're not in a position to basically let pitchers work through stuff, and I'm not necessarily sure that that's good. Now, on the other side of it, I think that it's obviously good if you're going to stretch out your true starters. And now a true starter, right, is if you get 5 or 6 innings, man, you're feeling you're doing pretty great if you've got somebody that's considered durable, man.
Yes.
So it's really interesting to see how the game has changed. I don't like it in terms of what it does to the length of games in the postseason, and I don't think that you can do it, you know, all the way through your regular season. You know, maybe some will have that happen. I just don't find it very practical. But in some terms, like I said, in the postseason, I think you're going to start to see that. I think you're going to see more and more of it as, once again, as managers get itchy. We saw that in spades throughout the entire postseason, it seemed like.
Yeah, I thought the Yankees, they surprised me because they built up a bullpen, adding Britton and Robertson and already having Chapman and Betances, et cetera, and they just had a bunch of guys there. And then they started Sabathia in the elimination game. I thought they might start a reliever and go the Tampa route. And I think if they had it over again, they might do that. So I'm not sure where that's headed, but it certainly seems like you're going to use a lot of arms. One other thing I was bringing up earlier, and I wanted to know whether you agreed. You know, it seems like it's almost 3 seasons now. You've got the regular season that starts in April. Then you've got the season that starts after the trade deadline, August 1st, in which you have about 60 games left. And then you have a postseason if you're lucky enough to make it. And it seems like they all have different personalities. And I bring that up because I wonder whether some teams, especially good teams that might consider trading, not bubble teams, but teams that think that they're going to be in it, you know, can wait to the regular season to see how some things work out. Like people talking about the Yankees and Clint Frazier or Montgomery, their pitcher, who's coming off Tommy John. When will he be ready? What's going to happen with Ellsbury? You got these, you know, floating situations, and we tend to want to get it done in the offseason as fans. Let me see what our 25-man guys or 25-man roster looks like. But Brian Cashman and company and you know, these guys, Dombrowski, et cetera, they can be more patient, can't they?
Yeah, I think that they are. The general manager's position, of course, is kind of interesting, right? I mean, you have your 5-year plan, you've got your long-term vision, and then you're starting to look really at, you know, they always say the most important day, of course, is the day that you're playing, right? That's the day that means the most. But as you're looking out, of course, over the season, it is broken up that way. I always say that I'm not really going to put my eggs in any one basket until the trade deadline is over, or certainly, you know, the All-Star break. You start to really start to look to see where teams are at, because that's where, you know, you stress on your pitching roster and everything that goes along with it is there, and you start to formulate how you're going to make your 40-man roster when they expand them. So, I would agree that that's largely the case, and you do have a little bit of flexibility to see how some guys are going to be. And if you're a team that's really building themselves, and let's be honest, that teams, certainly the Yankees now, certainly the Red Sox this past season, you know, the Dodgers were probably the best example. They were teams that were being built in the offseason, not for the regular season, but for the postseason.
Right, right.
And so certainly you're looking at those moves and where you're at, and you're trying to stretch those guys out and trying to avoid risk to a certain extent. You want to be able to see how they're going to do, but you can move your pieces around. And if you've got a farm system that allows you to bring some guys up. Guys, every single year, it seems like, there is always somebody that comes up that is the guy that you least expect to be a factor in it. It was Pierce in the World Series for the Red Sox, right?
I mean, yeah, Pierce and Nate Eovaldi, two guys that weren't on their radar on June 1st.
Yeah, and so, once again, I do think that it is always that way. That's why, game, you know, as much as I believe in analytics to a certain extent, I'm fully on board with both scouting and analytics. I believe in both of them as core tenets of what you need to have. Look, there's a reason games aren't played on paper. You know, you discover these things as you go along the way.
No doubt about it. We're talking to Maury Brown, writes baseball for Forbes, and talking about the game and how it is. You know, Met fans have been in this quandary, and you can understand it, loving the starting pitching that started with Harvey, Wheeler, DeGrom, Syndergaard, et cetera, and that group. And, you know, it's still alive in that Wheeler pitched very well at the end of the year. Syndergaard had quite a few moments, and we all know about DeGrom. So you're in love with that as a Met fans. It's what you've watched. It's what you waited for. And yet they're every day eight outside of the pitching, plus their relief core needs help. Their every day eight is really average. So you got to give something to get something. What do you think of the position the Mets are in, and how do you expect them to go about being more competitive in a younger, seemingly improving NFC or National League East?
I mean, yeah, and this is always the problem, right, guys? I mean, you certainly have the most difficult thing about baseball is it is the most team-oriented sport that there is, right? It's not like LeBron James in the NBA, where I can take one player, I can take Clayton Kershaw or whoever you want to pick, and put them on a team, and if you don't have the rest of the pieces with them around him to support it, it doesn't really work. I mean, that's an unfortunate situation for the Mets, as you mentioned, because they're, of course their pitching has been so stellar that you begin to wonder, all right, when do we have value for certain players that starts to erode? How far can we ride this with the players that we've got and be competitive?
We're not winning with them, which is the worst part.
We're not winning with them.
Right.
So at what point, I mean, you're always going to have fan bashback. They're going to go, why would you get rid of him? I mean, I'm in the Pacific Northwest, and I'm looking at people going, why did you get rid of James Paxton to the Yankees? He's the best trade piece that you've got. And that answered their own question. It's the best trade piece that they had. So you do start to get into that situation, and I'll come back to Syndergaard, because certainly DeGrom, I would hope, you know, it's surprising that we haven't seen an extension. I keep wondering about that. You know, how far do you ride that? Do you sit there and continue to go along as you are and then try and figure out a way to kind of build around it quickly, because they're starting to run out of runway after a while? You know, I think that Syndergaard, and they've made no bones about it, if somebody wants to put a package together for him, they'll do it. Will there be people that will be upset? Yeah. Will it get them in a position that they're better than they are now? Maybe. I mean, it really is one of those things to where you do have to give up something to get something in return, because clearly right now they didn't end the season on a high note. And I think that, you know, that's patently obvious at this
stage. And these winners are dynamic offensively. You know, as we talk about the NFL right now and in the cycle they're in, you know, it's New Orleans, it's Kansas City, it's the LA Rams, dynamic offensively. And in baseball, Houston's lineup, Cleveland's lineup, Boston's lineup, Yankees lineup, Dodgers lineup. These are Cubs lineup. These are you know, powerful teams that score some runs, and starters are only going five or six innings anyway. So, you know, I mean, to me, now is the time. A lot of pushback, but to me, now is the time.
Yeah, and that's the, you know, we're kind of dancing around this thing with how starters are being used, and of course they're, you know, they're a limited quantity in MLB, you know, really good ones, right? And so they, of course, get high dollar salaries, long salaries and contracts that basically stretch your payroll. Well, if you start to build around your offense and you go ahead and you can go out now, the value of relievers are certainly going to go up, where you can make some investments in that. I'm not saying that you go out and go and get just everyday, you know, replacement level guys as your starters, but you can certainly go out and say, look, we can go ahead and trade and we can build around that. We no longer need a guy that's going to go out every time and give me seven innings and then a setup guy and basically my closer. I mean, those days seem like they're long gone right now. They're certainly not going to look away from it. Justin Verlander is a great example of a guy that's really durable and does very well. But I do think that there is that consideration where if I can get two or three pieces now for one, well, I'm going to have to start considering that. And that's where I think the game is kind of shifting right now.
Maury, good conversation. We appreciate it very much. Enjoy the rest of the weekend, and thanks for being a part of the Fan tonight.
Thanks so much, guys. Have a great evening.
All right, there you go. Maury Brown of Forbes, Mike McCann around the corner on the Fan.